Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, licensed marriage family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, emotional worker, and a social critic. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. We invite your calls and story to 781-3875. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Hello, Brian. How are you?
I'm excellent. How about you?
You're not excellent. Don't lie.
Okay, I'm feeling a little under the weather.
I'm sorry.
It's all right.
And you're tired.
Yeah.
Because you have a baby that doesn't know his night and days yet.
Right. He's starting to learn, but last night he fell backwards a little bit.
He was chatting with you.
Yeah, he wasn't crying so much. He was awake and wanted to have fun with us.
That's good. Well, you know, it's all a process of learning how to be part of the culture. You know, from the moment we're born, we're trying to figure out, you know, where we fit and how we belong and who we are. And It's a wonderful journey. But I'm sorry you're tired, because you do look tired. I'll try to keep you perked up. You know, it's interesting. This week, we're kind of going off in a different direction. Maybe not a different direction, because it's all about community and family and relationships, but maybe addressing a different age group in some ways. You know, each week we come together, you and I, and we talk about mental health and relationships and what it is to be a human in our world right now and how do we navigate all of that. We're building a community amongst our listeners and trying to reach out and connect each other in some way. Mm-hmm. I know the power of radio, right? To get into our car or our home or through our computer or all the ways that we can interact with the voice coming over the air. It becomes part of this community trying to support each other's mental health and well-being. So we invite your calls throughout the hour at 781-3875. If you'd like, you can find us on Facebook. The Reluctant Therapist is our page. And we've had some great response and different follow-ups to different shows. Last week, we talked to someone from the Central Coast Hour Exchange. Remember that?
Yep.
If you join this group, you can barter your services with other people in the community. And I checked out their Facebook page, and it looks like it's a really vibrant community that I'm looking forward to getting involved with. But they posted on our Facebook page if you'd like a link and more information. And then last week we talked to our friend Kyle, who called in with his
dilemma, his choice that he had to make.
Yeah, his collegiate dilemma, because Sometimes even our great choices can cause us a lot of stress. And so for those of you who were following Kyle's story last week, he did decide to go to Princeton. So go, Kyle.
Yeah,
go
congratulations.
Tigers. I know, we're excited for him.
Yeah, he had two good choices to make.
He had quite a few, but the two it had come down to were very different. And so that's exciting. And that's one of the things, again, that I love about our program, is that we get to share our wisdom, connect need and knowledge. If there's something that's going on in your life, if there's a relationship issue or a personal issue, a concern that you have about something in your life and you'd like to bounce it off a therapist, and also, you know, share your story a little bit, because oftentimes unburdening our story is all we need to help us feel like we can cope and move on. And especially for people that are listening who are sharing the same struggles, they can support you vicariously and also by, you know, witnessing your story. So that's who we are here at The Reluctant Therapist. You can also contact me by email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And if you aren't comfortable going on the air with us, Brian always is answering those phone calls with his charm and wit. Mm-hmm. And he's happy to relay any questions that you have. So this week, my friend, I want to talk about caregiving, multi-generational families, and are you someone who's going to take in your parents as they get older? And are your parents wanting to be taken in when they get older? Because it's an ongoing, interesting dilemma in my household. Maybe it's not a dilemma at all, actually. It's just the one of our ongoing conversations is that I have always said, maybe it's because I'm an emotion worker, which means that through my profession, I deal with emotions and relationships and connections and keeping the family together. I mean, that's my role in my family also. I've always said, you know, when my parents get older and when they need to, I hope they'll come stay with us, because I have a real sense of wanting to share that journey, their journey with them, and be part of their life cycle. But also because I just am so uncomfortable, the whole institution of care that we put, you know, our elderly into. We're one of the few cultures in the world that actually does that, and I just have never been able to be comfortable with it. But at the same time, I know enough people who have been faced with that decision of what to do with their elders, with grandparents or parents who are sick or ill or need 24-hour care, and how to best meet their needs with also trying to meet their own needs. So I know enough of those stories to feel conflicted. I know that my sense and desire is I want to take care of my parents and have them feel welcome and loved in my home and, you know, continue to be part of our family. But to me, the ironic part is that if you ask my parents, they'll say, I don't want to move in with you. I want to stay independent. I don't want to have to, you know, leave my life and move in with you. Mm-hmm. So we're already at odds. But from my perspective, I've already tried to lay the groundwork for my daughter and my future son-in-law that I don't think I am an isolated person. I don't think I could be okay being removed from my family and trying to make a life in an institutionalized care setting or even living by myself in my home. I've always been a very connected person. So I imagine myself one day wanting to be part of their life. But then that's nice while everybody's healthy and functioning and doing okay. You know, I would imagine that I could be helpful. I really want to be a part of my grandchildren's lives when they come around. I'm not in a hurry, Kirsten and Brian, so don't feel like you have to jump in there. Did you know that my son-in-law's name is Brian also?
I did, yeah.
Okay, so we don't want to confuse everyone.
Right.
Although I love you, you're not officially my son-in-law.
All
He's
right,
another
then.
Brian. But, you know, I imagine that while I'm young and healthy and feeling pretty good, that I would be an asset to my grandchildren's lives, and I want to always be a part of my children's life. And so I imagine that that would be a really healthy, wonderful piece. But then what happens when it becomes a caregiver situation? You know, then how do you make that transition? Do I want my children to have to full-time care for me if that were the case? What if I live for 20 more years in that state? Do I want to become a burden to my children? I don't know. I'm conflicted. What's your experience with this, Brian? Have you thought about it?
Yeah, I've thought about it, and we've lived with it with my grandfather, who had a stroke and went into an institution. He used to live in the Bay Area, and we had him get closer to here. There's a place in Morro Bay. The name of it's escaping me now. Which is basically like live-in condos for people that needed assisted living. And he didn't enjoy that, and we didn't enjoy it for him either. And so we ended up selling his house and our family's house and buying a big one where he could stay with us. And then we had nurses come and take care of him and then we would take care of him and basically had live-in care 24 hours a day, but he got to be in a house with his family, and he was much happier and we were much happier.
So you remember that as being a positive experience for everyone?
Yeah, it was always rough for me to see him after his stroke because he was always himself, but he couldn't talk or walk very well anymore, and it was rough to see him like that. But it was much better to see him happy and around us and in a house with all his stuff that he'd had for 50, 60 years.
And so, was he able to stay with you until he passed?
Yeah, up until he got pneumonia right at the end and had to be put in the hospital for a few days, and he was begging to come home, and he didn't get well enough to come home. So that was pretty rough.
It is rough. But I think the beauty in your story is that you were part of this whole life cycle journey. You got to see death. You got to see your grandfather pass. You got to see his true experience. And I think we in our Western culture have really isolated ourselves from birth and death and sickness in many ways. Mm-hmm. You know, that we've been taught that, you know, birth has to happen behind closed doors and don't want everyone experiencing it. And it's kind of mysterious and secretive. And then when it comes to death and dying, we do the same thing. It's very cloistered. It's behind closed doors. It's very sanitized. And we don't interact with the body, you know, of the person after they've passed. And I think that's an anomaly. Throughout human history, it's been a much more integrated experience that families live together much more closely and were much more involved in each other's day-to-day life. And children grew up seeing birth and death and dying as a normal part of the life process. And I think we do a disservice to ourselves and to our children and to our culture when we live these very sanitized experiences. Because one, I think it causes us to live in this kind of denial state that we're ever going to die or that people die. And I'm always surprised that people are surprised when death happens, because that is the end result of life, is death. And it might come at a very young age, and it might come in an old age, but it comes to people. And we try so hard to hang on, you know, to people, to keep them living, even if the quality of life is so low that you wonder, you know, if it's beneficial or if anyone's doing okay with this, and we just hang on instead of kind of allowing ourselves to go through that process. I don't know. These are just my brain is a million places mm-hmm. with it, and I'm love to hear your story. What are your feelings about multi-generational families? What is it to be a caregiver? Are you a caregiver, and what does that entail? You can give us a call at 805-781-3875 to join this conversation and share your thoughts. You can always check us out on Facebook, The Reluctant Therapist, or if you'd like to just call in and ask a question and Brian could pass it along, we're happy to do that too. But when we talk about multi-generational families, as I said, you know, I'm thinking of this idealized version. I grew up watching The Waltons, of course. And that's probably too old for you, right?
Well, I know who they are, thanks to my father.
Okay, good. So the Waltons were kind of this iconic multi-generational family that was the norm prior to World War II. You know, after World War II, we really had this push out to the suburbs, and there was a lot of wealth that pushed into the economy, and so we built the suburbs and individual homes. And for the first time in history, people really moved far away from their families of origin and that support. You know, prior to that, it was a real tribal, communal, community experience to raise a family. And so there was a lot more support. And I think one of the reasons that caregiving or tending to our parents as they age or grandparents as they age is that it becomes a very isolated experience for the caregiver, that quite often it ends up being just the caregiver at their home caring for their parent with very little support or backup. And as difficult as it is to take care of children on our own, it's equally as difficult to take care of parents on our own. And it's equally as difficult to take care of our own lives on our own. You know, as much as we want to be independent, I think it's a challenge to expect us to live our life journey singularly and be responsible for another human being. I don't know. What are your thoughts? Hi, Julie. You're on the air. What's on your mind? Julie, are you there? I think we're having trouble with Julie. And I'll just hang in there and we'll figure it out. This is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we're talking about family and multi-generational families and caregiving. And what does it take to bring in other family members into our home? You know, they recently did a study because after the crash a few years ago, the economic crash, there was a lot of families that were struggling, losing their homes, losing their jobs, and trying to figure out different ways to live their lives. And so of the 62% of the 6 million plus multi-generational homes, that's what we believe, there are about 6 million multi-generational homes right now, 62% of them are adult children who actually moved back in with their parents. And most of it, 50% of those families moved in for financial reasons. And the report that I read, or the study that I read, showed that 48% of those families reported that there was very little conflict or stress that made it really undesirable to maintain that relationship. So that even though the families were able to get back on their feet and able to be financially secure, a lot of them have chosen to stay in the multi-generational setup because it turned out to be so beneficial, not just for the families financially, but also for everyone's emotional well-being and health. One of the things they found is that children, as I mentioned earlier, really benefit from being a part of that life cycle of seeing their parents interacting, of seeing their grandparents regularly, getting to know them as they are, and not just kind of the drop in and drop off a present and leave kind of grandparents, but actually that day-to-day, getting to know each other and being a part of each other's lives. It's a way that grandparents can pass on their culture and their wisdom and family values, especially in the way that we've set up our lives right now, where it's just fast-paced and moving forward and no one has time and parents are overwhelmed and burdened. We miss out on a lot of opportunity to teach culture to our children, to pass on our values, to pass on our belief system to our children. And so there's a lot of benefits to be seen for the multi-generational living, but also for the grandparents. You know, we are not meant to live in isolation, although it's become more of the norm. But what they found is for a lot of elder Americans or elderly people, they have a greater sense of purpose when they're giving back to their younger generations. It provides stimulation for their brain. It reduces the risk for depression and anxiety. So we're seeing a lot of mental health benefits also. So Julie, you're on the air with a Reluctant Therapist. What's on your mind?
Hi. Yeah, I've really been enjoying your program. I wanted to tell you that, number
one. Thank you.
And I really enjoy the topics that you choose to talk about. And so talking about your topic today, I couldn't agree with you more. I think there's something really kind of strange about our culture, about how the big push is to get the kids out of the house as soon as possible, and then God forbid that the parents should ever come back. And we live these really separated lives where I think there's a huge benefit to the multi-generational. I kind of grew up watching the Waltons.
Me too.
And, you know, yeah, and their grandparents lived, and it seems to economically make more sense. So I'm kind of making a long story long, but getting back to the subject at hand, I have a mom who's 80, and I've told her, when you are no longer wanting or able to live on your own, you will come and live with me or with one of my siblings, because we don't want her to go to a, quote, old folks' home. And I would like her to live in my house and to die with her family, and I would like to care for her until the point that she requires more care, meaning that we would bring in a daily caregiver kind of person, or when she does, if she ever reaches the point that she must be hospitalized, like what Brian was talking about with his grandfather, mm-hmm. then sometimes that's out of your control. But I also think it's okay to let a person go ahead and get sick and just die.
Yeah.
That's okay.
I think that's can be controversial for some people, because we're so taught that the idea is that we maintain life as long as we can. But it's interesting, because in more and more conversations I have with my friends, we will say, maybe it is just best to live our lives and die, that all of the life prolonging measures we take maybe are not in our best interest, or maybe not in anyone's best interest, and to live well and die might be the most holistic thing we can do. And it's scary to say it out loud, isn't it?
Well,
but it's true.
I think, yeah, it's not so much for me scary as much as I guess people think that you don't care or
right.
something like that if you accept the fact that dying is a part of living.
Yes.
But it is a full circle.
It
and
is.
I'm always joking about how, you know, you're born, you're a baby, and all you do is sleep. Well, you get old and all you want to do is sleep too. And that's because, to me, it's a circle, and you're just completing that circle. And in the same way as you have to care for a baby or an infant, you need to care for old people, because it is that circle. And it's a cycle of life, and I think there's nothing wrong with the children of those adults then becoming the caregivers. To me, I think it's normal, and I think it does make for healthier understandings of the life process.
I think you...
And it's, to me, it's all about the love.
It is
Everything.
All about the love, Julie. That's beautifully said. I appreciate your call. I hope you'll call again.
Okay, thank you.
Have a great
you.
Day.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We're talking about multi-generational living, or what are we going to do as our parents and grandparents age, and are they going to move into our home? Or as I mentioned before, in my family's case so far, at this point, my parents said, well, no, we're never going to move in with you. We want to be independent. And I am a little nervous to take this next call, because I think it's my mom. You're on the air with a Reluctant Therapist. What's on your mind? Hello.
Can I speak to her? Is she on there?
Oh, that is my mom and her friend Dorothy.
Dorothy.
Don't be old people now, Mom and Dorothy.
Yes, Elizabeth.
Yes, Dorothy.
I'm enjoying your program very much. The one thing that I'm concerned with, and you know I'm 91 years old,
yes,
and I live next door to your mother, and I have loved watching her interactions with her children and grandchildren, but the thing that you sort of missed a little bit there is they're young. And I didn't raise, but they came every summer, five grandchildren from all over. And I had them for 3 months. And they were just part of my family. They were great. But I was young. Now I'm 91. And I have my daughter who would just love to come and move in with me and help me. And we tried it for a week. And we were both so happy to say goodbye to each other. One had to dominate the other. Somebody, it's like an exchange of roles. And people in my bracket are not eager to exchange, to give up what authority they have when they see so much slipping by. The thing that bothers me is that you tend to blame the child that's taking best care of you. It's happened in many homes where I remember my mother was one of nine, and it was her younger sister that took the brunt of all the abuse from my grandmother and grandfather, because she was the last one along, and she had the most children, she had the most to do, she had everything to do with, and yet she was the one that my grandparents picked on all the time. Like, where's the family? Why aren't they here? Who's going to come over today? And she had to keep calling the brothers and sisters to come over and help sit Grandma and Grandpa, who expected everybody to show up for cake and coffee at the designated time. So there's a lot of individualism in this.
I think it is.
Every case is going to be different, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And I think the thing that's important is that it is all about individual choice and finding the best ways for our families to work together. I mean, Dorothy is a remarkable woman, Brian, and she does live next door to my parents independently and does very well. And I think that when you have strong personalities and we have our very individualistic culture, you know, it really depends on what the family has determined to be the best for them. My concern is that we so quickly negate the possibility of parents moving in with children because of strong personalities or because of history in the family, and we just deny that there's a way that we can actually work it out together. But I think that it's going to be an interesting journey for everyone whose parents are aging to figure out what's going to be the best way to care for them and to care for each other and to maintain the family closeness. So, Dorothy, I appreciate you calling, and I guess my mom's not going to get on the air today.
Yeah, she's going to get on right now.
All right. Mom, you can have your 1 minute say. It's all like right. Being at home,
Hi,
Brian.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Mom.
Hi. We're having a great time. Brian told me to turn the radio down, so I've completely lost the connection because I couldn't find the volume on the computer.
Again, welcome to the show, Mom.
Thank you very much.
Give me your 1 minute take on this because I have a sense of how you feel, but share it with the world.
No, I just have always thought that if I was fortunate enough to be able to stay in my own home, I would like to do that and perhaps have someone come in and help me out if I needed it. But you know, we've all worked hard to make little lives for ourselves, and that is very important to a person who's older, to have a schedule, to have friends and, you know, hobbies. And I would miss my painting very much and my golf and what have you, so it would be lovely to live with you, but you'd have to make a whole nother life at that point.
So I guess, oh, absolutely. So I guess I'm just going to move up there with you.
Why don't you do that?
Okay, good. I'll hang up. I appreciate you calling Mom and having Dorothy give her perspective also.
Oh, great, Elizabeth. I'll talk to you soon.
Love you, Mom.
Love you. Bye.
You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. We are taking your calls at 805-781-3875. We're talking about getting older. What do we do to help each other out as families? And maybe it's not when someone gets elderly also. Maybe there's someone in your family who has an illness that needs care, extra caregiving. How do we step in and help each other out, especially in a culture that's very much about being individualistic, staying in our own homes, being independent, having our own lives? You know, we've really become a culture of isolationists in a lot of ways. And I wonder if it is to our emotional and mental health and overall well-being as a culture. I don't know, and I'm really interested to hear your thoughts. 781-3875. Hi, Mary. You're on the air with the Reluctant Therapist. What's on your mind?
Hi. I like the topic of your program. It's necessary at this time with so many baby boomers. And as I was listening, I heard you point out the fact that in the United States, we cloister away birth, we cloister away death. We don't look at it in a full and healthy way, like is done in other countries. And yet, throughout this program, I hear you not using the word died. I hear you using the word passed, which is a euphemism. And again, I feel, why are we edging away from the word died? And I felt in a way that I felt confused because I felt that what you were saying you didn't like happening, you were doing yourself by not using the actual word of what does happen, died, and using the word passed. And I wanted to ask you about that and where you are with that word.
I love that question, Mary. And it's funny because I go back and forth in my head while I'm actually speaking about where I want to go with the language, because language is so powerful. And so, you know, in talking about death and dying in the cycle of life, I just feel like I'm talking about the natural progression. And then we talk about dying or death or someone dying. I try to be a little more sensitive maybe to the person telling the story and their comfort level with sharing. So until someone who's talking about a death in their family or someone in their family dying and they use the word die or how they died. I try to hold back a little bit and use the term past just out of respect for their feelings and comfort level with it, if that makes sense. Are you still there, Mary?
I'm here.
Okay.
And thank you. At the same time, I wonder, I understand respecting people's comfort level, and yet, I don't know, I haven't lived in this country for many years, and I'm back here now, and I keep hearing people use this word past,
mm-hmm.
and I always feel a little wave of sort of irritation, because it's like, we all can't even say the word. We all have to turn our heads and step back from it. And I do understand that some people, the whole idea of death is just too much for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I find in this country this word past is being used more often than the word die, and I guess I just don't understand why.
Yeah, and I do think it's, again, I would invite other perspectives on this also. I'd like to join in the conversation because, as I said, I think from my perspective hosting the show, I want to make sure that I'm inclusive to everyone who's listening and try to be careful with their feelings. Although my personal preference would be to say when someone is born, they're born, and when someone dies, they've died. And that they're, you know, we don't talk about entering when someone is born, right? We talk about them being born. But I do think that language is very, very powerful. And in our culture, because we've sanitized a lot of our life experiences, because we tend to want everything to be happy. And, you know, we are taught that we're supposed to live our lives for the highest level of happiness and well-being, that we're very afraid of things that aren't comfortable, that might be uncomfortable. And I think it goes along with my conversation about multi-generational living or the discomfort of families having to come together and find a way to live, you know, comfortably in one arrangement is not always going to be easy or maybe happiness all the time for everyone, but there are adjustments that we make in our life for the better of the whole collective and not just thinking about ourselves. And I think that's a lot of how we use language, is to prevent ourselves from having to feel anything too deeply. And I hope that gets the conversation started on that. And I really appreciate your bringing it into the conversation, Mary.
Okay, well, thank you so much. It'll be interesting to see if anyone addresses this. And thanks so much for all you're doing.
Thanks so much, Mary. Enjoy your day.
You too.
And you are listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Your phone calls are welcome and encouraged, 805-781-3875. It's a lofty conversation on everything from death and dying to multi-generational living. Are you wanting to move in and be a greater part of your grandchildren's lives? Or are you wanting to move back in with mom and dad for financial help and also to be a part of their lives? What happened to the Waltons, Brian? What happened to us after World War II, where it became such a burden to have all our families in one room? You know, we talk more about the dysfunction of family get-togethers than how families can be dependent on each other, can cohabitate in the same place without having it become a war. I mean, that was the norm from the beginning of time until most recent history, where we became very much about the individual and our own individual journey. Things have certainly changed, and maybe for the better for some, but I don't know overall if our mental health has improved or deteriorated with the same level that we've become much more isolated in our lives. What do you think? 781-3875. We'll be right back to talk with Sue.
That number to call again to speak with Elizabeth, the Reluctant Therapist, is 781-3875. That's area code 805-781-3875. Here's a highlight from the KCBX community calendar. In musical events this Saturday, in the afternoon, singer Allison Oren will be entertaining the entire family at the Slow Library's Children Room. Then in the evening, the Slow Blues Society features Kay Bowler in concert at the Vets Hall. For all the details, go to the community calendar at kcbx.org. The number to call, again, is 781-3875. This is The Reluctant Therapist on KCBX.
What I so enjoy about being able to do this program, again, is getting to connect with you all as a community and hearing different perspectives and voices on this topic. And, you know, I think about these things all during the week. I think about a lot of things. So it's nice to have this opportunity to kind of throw it out there and see where we all are with this and this topic and any other topic that's on your mind. I really enjoy hearing from you. And Sue, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm glad you called in.
I'm calling because I wanted to kind of mention that my father lives with my husband and I, our family, and I wasn't born in this country and I wasn't raised in this country, and kind of like I'm in a multicultural marriage. My husband's American-born, American-raised, and for him it was very difficult when my father did move in with us. Our perception of the way our kind of like our responsibility towards our parents is that when we were born, we were weak and helpless, and they took care of us, they protected us, they stepped up and took that role. And now that we are older and our parents are kind of in the situation where they are coming to the end of their life cycle, it's our responsibility to step up and take care of them, at least in my cultural point of view. Mm-hmm. It's traditional to have your parents move in with you to kind of keep them in that circle. I hear a lot of times like on how people have passed away alone, and it bothers me, but at the same time, I kind of understand that need for some people for their independence and for their own personal lives. My father has, you know, we keep them as active as we can, and traditionally, you know, they have their own lives, and we work with them to keep that going, but we're also there for them when they do need us, because they do, and they're reluctant to ask, but at our home, he cooks with us, and we cook for him, and it's a shared lifestyle, and you kind of move into that. But I think a lot of Americans born in this country and haven't really experienced maybe a foreign culture don't understand the importance of having our elders with us at that point in their lives.
So, Sue, can I ask you what kind of adjustments it's been for you and your husband as a couple to have your father there?
My husband, it's very hard for him. There's a lot of issues with kind of like an understanding of it's not just our home anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just, you know, our family. He's part of the family, so he's had to learn to kind of adjust to that mindset, mm-hmm. which was easier for me because I've lived with this man. You know, I lived with my father when I was young, and so I have an understanding and a sense of ownership to him. Mm-hmm. You know, where my husband doesn't quite know how to react or deal with him, he's concerned about, you know, privacy issues and so forth and so on, and I try to explain to him, just imagine he's like your father, and then I get that whole response, well, I understand that, but my father was like this.
Right.
And it hasn't been easy, but it's something we both worked at. I think it would have been, it would have probably been easier if we came both from the same culture and background, same kind of like understanding. But because we are a multicultural family, he's having a hard time adjusting. And then I know that his family kind of considers it kind of strange that my father is living with us also.
Right. And I think you're expressing an experience that a lot of people are having. So I really appreciate you calling and sharing that, because I think that there is that clash of generations, the clash of cultures. You know, we talked to my mom a little bit earlier, and she's very much of that very independent generation post-World War II, wanting the independence as long as possible or forever if she has her choice. And that was a cultural shift in the United States, you know, with her generation. But I think we're seeing kind of with much more multicultural population in the United States that there is a great many people that are saying, hey, this was a cultural value we brought with us, taking care of our elders, having, you know, multi-generational homes. 44 million Americans at this point are caring for someone who's elderly in their home. So it's happening everywhere. But yet as a culture, we still talk about independence and living on our own. And I have this sneaky feeling, too, that because there is money to be made in institutionalizing our elderly through different care programs and the facilities and, you know, places that they're housed, because there is money to be made, then in some ways we're commercializing old age as a way of building a whole, you know, industry. I don't know.
I do agree on that.
Yes. So whether or not it is in our best interest, it definitely has taken hold as a way to have a whole nother industry thrive. And it is the fastest growing age group, those 65 and older. It's going to double to 70 million by the year 2030. So again, if you're someone wanting to build a financial security in the future, then you're going to want to build housing for the elderly. Maybe that's a little sarcastic. I don't know. What do you think, Brian?
I don't know.
Oh, you're letting me hang out here.
Yeah.
Sue, I appreciate you calling in and sharing your perspective.
Thank you.
And this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. The number to reach us is 781-3875. And you know, you can always listen to previous broadcasts by visiting kcbx.org. And under the Program Archives tab, we have all of our previous shows if you'd like to check it out. And you can email me at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com or find us on our Facebook page. Always love to hear from you. Hi, Kristen, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. Yeah, I'm calling about a call that came in a couple of people ago regarding the language of death and dying versus passing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was an interesting perspective. And also, I really agree with the fear that our culture has created around those words, the death and dying. I also, however, use passing or past out of respect for people who believe in an afterlife,
mm-hmm.
Because really it's death or dying from this particular plane of the universe and possibly moving on to another, and there are people who really do believe in that. And so I like to honor that transitional period instead of just saying, well, they're dead, they're done,
yeah.
You know.
And I can understand that perspective. That makes, you know, makes a lot of sense that we're trying to honor, one, the perspective, and two, the idea that there is something after this experience that we move or pass on to.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for sharing that, Kristen. I appreciate you calling into the show.
Sure, thanks.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Hi, Joe. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi. I was there with my parents when both my mother and father died. For financial reasons, both I and my sister moved into my parents' home, and my father was very happy to have us there. My mother became ill, and because we were there to help out, she was able to die at home, but she lingered for a year, and it was seeing a person that you're close to like that, your mother, slowly dwindle away over years. Is very, very hard. I mean, we are happy that we're able to be there and allow her to die at home, which was comforting for her, but it's so emotionally draining to have it go on for a year like that.
Mm-hmm.
And furthermore, she was very afraid to die, mm-hmm. so we kept reassuring her. But and then maybe a couple of years after she died, my father became ill, and that was a very different experience. He was always very healthy and active his entire life, and he went pretty quickly, but he was not afraid at all, and I think I learned something from that. There was never any sign of fear in his eyes. He never expressed any fear about dying. It's funny, he called himself an atheist. I think he was actually a very spiritual person, though, but there was no fear there at all, and he went pretty quickly and very calmly, so it was a very different experience with both of them.
And
I have both good and negative feelings having gone through that. A lot of what I remember about my parents was from them dying. I mean, I'd rather remember them as healthy and happy, but a lot of my thoughts are from when they actually were going through the dying process. Except something I really learned from my father, though, was how to go through that experience without any fear. I'm just hoping, you know, now that I'm 70, I can, when I get to that point, I can face it without fear.
And Joe, if you don't mind me asking, would you move in with your children if you have them, or would you want to be in a multi-generational situation again as you get closer to the end of your life?
I think I'm a little different. I I would like my privacy. I wouldn't want my children to have to see me go through that process.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly why I feel that way, but it's after having seen my parents go through that, I wouldn't want my children to have to see me go through that process.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like I would like to do it alone. I wouldn't want them, I don't know, getting old and decrepit and having somebody change my diapers.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want it to have to be my children.
I think that that's a common feeling. I mean, I know, as I said, I've had this conversation with my parents and my husband's parents, and I think that there is a lot to that, you know, how you want to be remembered. And I remember my grandfather was dying of cancer. He specifically asked that none of the grandchildren come back at all to see him because he wanted us to remember him the way we'd been when, you know, he was healthy and strong. And so I really can appreciate that and respect it. And I appreciate you calling in and sharing your story with us today.
Okay, thank you.
Have a great day, Joe.
Okay, bye.
You are listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We are talking about getting older and where are we going to live out our last days? And if you're younger and you have aging parents, are they going to move in with you? Are you going to all live together like the Waltons? There are some certain steps that need to happen to help families make that transition. It is really beneficial to go to some sort of mediation or counseling before the families join the household so that you can make some rules for each other that are mutual and beneficial and talk about communication issues or kind of hash out some things that might have been a problem when you were growing up. I mean, we can't really go into these situations of combining our households without taking steps beforehand to ensure that we have success, because quite often these relationships or these arrangements don't work out because we rush in out of the goodness of our heart without looking at the long-term consequences or talking about how we're going to deal with sticky issues, making room for each other, how we're going to treat each other. You know, this is a very valuable opportunity to utilize counseling for the benefit of a family who's making these transitions so that you can ensure the best possible outcome for everyone involved. We appreciate your calls on this subject or anything else along the lines of relationships and mental health, 781-3875. Kevin, you're on the air with a reluctant therapist. What's on your mind?
Yes, good afternoon. I just had a couple of quick points. Like myself, I live in an upstairs one-bedroom apartment, so it's not really practical. The elderly people up the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if people live long enough, at some point, they're almost going to need 24-hour care where they're lifted out of a bed and put into a chair and taken to the toilet and stuff like that. And the way the system's set up, if convalescent homes are really expensive.
Definitely.
And if you're on Medi-Cal or Medicare, you don't always, you know, you have to share a room and it's not always great. But, I mean, for being able to take care of somebody 24 hours might not be an option for somebody as far as being there to get them to the toilet and stuff like that.
I know, and you bring a good point because logistically, you know, it sounds good in the story. You just see the Waltons when everybody's up and walking around. It all looks like fun, sitting around having dinner together. But you're right. If there is someone who's infirmed and needing 24-hour care, then we start looking at logistics. How will we lift someone in and out? How will we care for their basic day-to-day? Because it isn't an infant that's, you know, meant for being able to be held and carried and changed. And it is your parent. So I think it's difficult to separate yourself out in some ways. So I think that's where we have to get very creative. And we've looked at, people have talked about, you know, having live-in care alongside with the family or having respite come in during the day. One of the friends that I talked to, her group had actually purchased an old motel, if you can picture that, and they've refurbished it and hired live-in care at this hotel. So I think there's 8 couples that are living there, and they have pooled their money and resources to hire in care to kind of help them out, and families come and stay. And so they've created their own kind of village or community of care together to avoid being put into an institutionalized situation. But I think you bring up a good point that we do have to think about this logistically when it comes to full-time 24-hour care. I really appreciate your calling in with that.
Yeah, I think nowadays the world's moving a little bit faster and everybody's busier. It's like you say, logistically, it's harder for people to do that. But I agree with you, especially in other cultures where it's nice if you can bring the parents into the home.
I do think it's a beautiful thing, and I do personally think that that is the law of nature, the way we're intended to be. I think things have sped up and changed dramatically in our culture. I think that we've kind of blindly jumped on this fast-moving bullet train without really questioning what the impact is to our children, to our elderly, to our own personal mental health and well-being. We're also busy trying to keep up with the pace of life. Then no one has been able to step aside and say, is this really what we want? Is this really the quality?
Yeah, not everybody can afford to live in a house. Like I said, I live in a one-bedroom upstairs apartment, so some of it is just, some options are not available for everybody, I guess.
No, I agree. And I guess that's where we all trying to figure out the best we can. Thanks for calling in, Kevin. Have a great day. And you are listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We are taking your calls at 781-3875 on whether or not living with your parents is such a great idea, or if it's really the way that it's supposed to be. What are we doing right or doing wrong in our culture to help our families to thrive and our elderly to thrive and feel loved and tended to? We'll be right back to talk to Charlie and Mike.
That number to call again is 781-3875 or area code 805-781-3875. If you're getting a busy line, that's because we have a lot of callers today. You could keep trying, and you'll get through eventually. We have about 10 more minutes left to take calls. Coming up at 3 o'clock, it is Fresh Air. And then at 4 o'clock, Marketplace, followed by All Things Considered at 4:30 here on Public Radio KCBX.
It is a beautiful thing, Brian, isn't it, to see the community of listeners here at KCBX?
Absolutely. We got a lot of people calling in today. It's great.
Well, I think it, again, it's those things that we really care about as human beings. It's the quality of life. It's our quality of lives. It's the quality of life for those that we love and care for. And how do we go ahead and take care of each other in the best possible way? You know, again, it's the thing I grapple with every day because I live in the world of human relationships, and I am constantly concerned that we are somehow missing out on those fundamental ways that we're supposed to be human with each other. And how can we pull that back? How can we make the best of our journey here on the planet? And I had this other thought when I was, you know, going over this topic and looking up information about caregiving and what it takes to merge families. And I kept being struck by this idea that maybe because our lifespans have been so lengthened, that we're living for such long periods of time, is it impossible now to stay within one tribe or one intimate relationship? Do we actually outlive some of our relationships? Do we outlive our families because we grow and change so many different ways in a lifetime if we're here 100 years? I don't know. That was another thought that popped up while I was thinking about this subject this week. Hey, Charlie, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Okay, Charlie. Yeah, I've experienced several of the options you talked about. One in particularly, the as your mom's situation, the supportive neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
Is that able to my mom to stay in the house that I grew up in for many at least 20 years, and I've seen, as a physician, I've seen situations where people, come live with us so you can be, and you disrupt them from their roots, and they really get lost.
Yeah.
One option that a lot of, unfortunately, we don't have, the mother-in-law cottage or servants' quarters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you have a little an apartment or something on the premises or nearby, then the other member of the family has a semi-independence and privacy.
I agree. And I love that option. And it's funny because my family is always talking about the family compound. My brother and sister and I send each other real estate notices all the time about different places, because I think in our family unit, we have this idea that we would love to have 5 acres or something, that all three of us kids could have a place, and not just for my parents, although I'd want them to be there, although they wouldn't want to be there, clearly, as we've heard. But the kids all, you know, have this idea that we'd like to spend our life somehow interacting more, that the fractured existence that we've had living our fast-paced lives really isn't always in the best interest of all of us, that maybe being more closely connected. Charlie, I appreciate you calling in with your thoughts on this.
Anyway, again, the idea of passed on, in some cultures, that talks about the cycle of life, and the passing on. It's not necessarily a euphemism, but in some cultures, it's a reality. Anyway, appreciate bringing up an interesting topic.
Thanks for calling in, Charlie. Have a great day. Hi, Mike. You're on the air with the Reluctant Therapist. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, I'd kind of like to make the case for assisted or senior living myself.
Okay. Get a little closer to your phone so I can hear you better.
Okay. I do work in this. I help people find those sorts of situations. I think your example of the Waltons, it's a little bit like President Obama recently was scolded for not being a strong leader or something like that, and he equated it to the sitcoms written for, or the situation presidencies written for television. Mm-hmm. I think the Waltons is an ideal and a romantic one, but I don't think it's practical in 80% of our people's lives. Everyone would like that, and I love sweet and nice myself, but I think to be practical, it's difficult for any family to be multi-generational, especially when it comes to hands-on care for a senior who is near passing. Dying.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if they can live communally in a larger assisted or independent living situation, they give them some peer support and also some at-hand support of a person, you know, available 24 hours a day. And they still have the support of their family if they choose to be involved and to visit. We're in that situation with my wife's parents. They were living independently for about 8 or 10 years, and now they've transitioned to a assisted facility. He's on hospice and has been for some time. They're both near 100. And anyway, it's been a kind solution. It's not perfect. It has its deficiencies, but I think living as Waltons would have its problems also.
Yeah, I agree. Because I do think that there are trade-offs in both, you know, ways of living our life. And I think both of them have a lot to do with pace. You know, assisted living has suited the pace of our life as it is now. And when we looked at the Waltons, even though it's a story that we talked about, the story was rooted in actually what the common life cycle was for people prior to World War II. Most people lived intergenerationally, but the pace of life was such that there was much more hands-on help to be had in an extended family situation. I think now a lot of us end up very isolated, and most caregiving ends up being one person caring for their parent
exactly.
alone. And that becomes daunting. And I appreciate...
I see the caregivers, you know, in these other facilities many times are very kind-hearted people who help these one to develop a relationship, you know, almost a caring, not a master servant, not an employee, and a beneficiary. They have a rapport. Mm-hmm. And even though they're given the hands-on care, and then you as a family member come to visit and you know those things are happening, but you're not the one providing them, and they know that you're not having to deal with those kinds of situations. I think it's quite sweet sometimes. I mean, obviously people want to stay in their homes, but there's so many isolated, as you said, who are in those homes, and long periods go between any connection with another human being.
Again, I do think that we have many ways to take the journey, and we're all just trying to figure it out. I appreciate your take on it, though, Mike. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Having a great day. Or have a great day. You are listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and I'm loving the conversations today. Brian's working like mad to answer your calls. We have a few minutes left. I think time for a couple more calls. Paulette, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi. I could really relate to Mike's suggestion about assisted living. I have a debilitating disability, and My main concern is that my son, who lives close by but doesn't call me or come over because he wants to remember me the way I was,
mm-hmm.
strong and capable rather than handicapped, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having a hard time dealing with that. I don't feel completely isolated, but I do need to find a good assisted living that I could fit in. One, I have a couple of solutions as far as possibilities for other people, like that's a great story about the couples that bought the hotel or the motel.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yes.
Very advanced thinking.
And for years, I've researched intentional communities.
I love them.
Yes. And even if that can't happen, collaborative neighborhoods,
mm-hmm.
or if the people can just find love instead of fault with each other, and you know, help each other. It'd be a really good world if we knew our neighbors, and you know, back in the Walton days when you helped your neighbor, you know.
And I think, again, I don't want to come off as a Pollyanna, but I don't believe I'm the only person who misses the slower sense of life and the slower sense of pace. And so I think saying it out loud, you know, telling our stories and sharing our stories as a community and talking about those things that we wish for and value are our ways of maybe making them manifest a little more in our culture. Because I think we've come to accept in some ways that, oh, well, things have changed. This is just the way it's going to be, which continues us moving away and further away from more of a community-based living.
Yes.
And these intentional communities I've always also been fascinated with. And I'm concerned, Paulette, that I want to make sure that you have some support systems that you're comfortable with. And
no, I just, the one with my son just breaks my heart the most.
Yeah, I would imagine.
And I don't have any other real family, you know. I grew up without aunts or uncles or cousins, and so
do you have a community of friends as family here?
Yeah, it's just difficult because you know, I've lost so many friends that, well, wasn't really a good friend that called and said, well, call me when you get better. Well, when you have a progressive disease, you know, it's like, okay, I'm not going to probably call. But, and people ask you out to do things, and it's difficult for me to get out. So, it's easy to lose friends, but I do have some close friends that do help, and
good.
I just love, yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're part of our community here, and I appreciate you calling to share your story with me today.
Thank you. Do you have any suggestions about what do I say to my son?
You know, I'm almost out of time today.
I'm sorry.
No, because I don't want to cut you short.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about it next Tuesday, or please send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, and I'd be happy to exchange emails with you on this topic.
Thank you so much. I forgot that I was on the radio.
That's all right. Thanks for calling, Paul. I'm glad you felt so comfortable.
Good. Thanks.
And this has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I apologize to Paulette that we won't be able to get to you today because we're almost out of time. But please also give me a call next Tuesday at the same time. I'd love to continue this conversation because it sounds like this topic is important to a lot of people and we have a lot of wisdom that we can share with each other. Oh, I'm sorry, it's Jean that we're not going to be able to get to talk to you today. So Jean, please call us back next Tuesday or, you know, contact me on my Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, and email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. I appreciate all of you for participating in our community experience here. A conversation with a reluctant therapist will be back next Tuesday at the same time. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. Brian, go home and get some sleep.
I'll try. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.